Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. We're having some beautiful fall weather, finally, after a very hot and humid spell that just ended. And last night, on a beautiful September night in Ames, there was a big football game, ISU versus Texas. Unfortunately, Texas defeated ISU 17-7. I'm sure a lot of people are in mourning over that, but hopefully today's show will brighten your day a little bit. Today we're going to be hearing from the outgoing mayor of Ames, Ann Campbell, who's retiring after serving as mayor for 12 years. And in the last part of the show, folks from Healthiest Ames will be here to tell us about an event that they're having this weekend. But first, it's Friday, so it's time for our weekly news roundup, and Dennis Hart is with us once again to tell us what we need to know about local news.
Gail, it was a busy week again, so let's get underway on this Friday morning. On Tuesday, in the Ames Tribune, big story, the Iowa Board of Regents on Monday approving an appropriations request that would give an extra $5 million to Iowa State University for student financial aid. If the legislature signs off on the request, ISU would be able to give that money to in-state undergraduate students as need-based financial aid in the 2019 fiscal year. Under the proposal, the University of Iowa would get $5 million and the University of Northern Iowa would receive $2 million. Under the five-year tuition plan ISU Interim President Benjamin Allen presented last month, undergraduate students from Iowa would see their tuition go up 7% annually starting in the 2018-2019 school year. The increased financial aid money would likely ease that burden. Also on Tuesday in the Tribune, word that at the Ames School Board meeting on Monday night, three recently elected school board members, Monique Binken, Gina Perez, and Jeanette Colton, were sworn in. Superintendent Tim Taylor welcomed the three new board members, who he said now bear the weight of serving on an educational board. He said, "I've heard many people say that actually being a member of the Board of Education is the toughest board that you can be on, and that's absolutely true." He said, "For anyone that doesn't believe it, all you have to do is remember what we're dealing with, the most important thing in everybody's life. Schools are for the kids." That was Tuesday night, and also at the school district meeting, 2 weeks after the Ames Community School District considered canceling its agreement with bus service provider Durham School Services following several issues with routes and times, the district reported at the board meeting that improvements had been made to hopefully prevent an increase in errors. Though progress is being made, Chief Financial District Officer and Board Secretary Treasurer Chris Stensland said the district is not completely out of the woods yet. "We're not all warm and fuzzy about it," as she put it, "but we're comfortable at this point, I think. Things will be slightly smoother from here on out." In a school board meeting earlier this month, both board members and parents had voiced their concerns about Durham on a variety of issues, ranging from late drop-off times to kids receiving misinformation and an extreme lack of communication. Stendland said the complaints from her office have decreased substantially, but she said they are still experiencing some issues with late buses. Superintendent Tim Taylor said, "In my opinion, we're about where we should have been before Labor Day. The amount of complaints have gone down, but that doesn't mean that everything is completely fixed at this point." On Wednesday in the Tribune, word that the Ames City Council on Tuesday night approved the first reading of an ordinance that would freeze the issuance of rental permits in neighborhoods near the Iowa State University campus for 6 months, an amended version of the original measure that proposed a citywide moratorium. The council also passed another amendment that would prohibit the expansion of current rental properties within the same time period, borrowing the language from a similar ordinance that Iowa City's council passed this summer. The six-member council decided against waiving the second and third readings of the ordinance, which are usually required, and that went against what some community members had asked. Now, more than 50 people attended the meeting. It was packed, mostly to see which action the council would take on the moratorium. 13 members of the public spoke to the council. Some had general comments. Some urged the council to pass the ordinance, and some asked it to reject the measure. Now, the legislature this year passed a law that renders Ames's current rental occupancy rule, which prohibits more than one family or three unrelated adults living in a single rental property. That will become null and void on January 1st. The original proposed moratorium would have halted the issuance of rental permits for single and two-family homes within Ames's city limits. That moratorium would prevent property owners from converting their homes into rental properties as the council decides whether to adopt new rental occupancy regulations. It's confusing and it's complex. After listening to the public input, Councilman Chris Nelson initiated the amendment to restrict the freeze, which the council approved, to six neighborhoods near Iowa State. Here they are: the South Campus area, West Side, Old Edwards, Oakwood Forest, College Creek, Old Ames Middle School, and the Oak Riverside neighborhoods. The moratorium would go into effect within the boundaries of each of the respective neighborhood associations for 6 months. The council approved the first vote on that on a 5-1 vote, with Councilwoman Amber Corrieri as the lone opposing vote. Next, the council discussed whether to put a constraint on expanding rental properties while that moratorium is in effect. Councilwoman Gloria Boettcher read from the ordinance that Iowa City's council passed in June. That city will not issue a building permit that would result in the enlargement of a rental property located inside the moratorium area. The Ames Council approved that amendment that would do the same thing on a 5-1 vote, with Councilwoman Bronwyn Beattie Hansen voting against it. And the council is going to take this all up again in 2 weeks. That was just the first reading. Now, according to the amended ordinance, property owners who have already finished a rental registration application before the moratorium went into effect will still be able to move forward with securing a rental permit. But there's already a bit of a rush. Ames building official Sarah Van Meteren said that in the past couple of weeks, the city has added 12 new rental properties, landlords rushing to get rental permits before a moratorium goes into effect. Six of them are within the neighborhoods near the ISU campus. She said it significantly exceeded the amount of applications she gets every 2 weeks. So this is a very complex, controversial issue. The council is going to revisit it again, and they will come up with yet more new restrictions before the end of the year. This moratorium is just the beginning to give them time to get their act together. Also Tuesday night at the council meeting, the council approved the installation of security cameras at certain spots in campus town. The council elected to wait until its next budgeting process to allocate the money to support the cameras in the district adjacent to the ISU campus. That discussion is going to take place sometime in February. City staff reported to the council that the cameras could deter some crime, but will likely be most useful in solving crimes. There's no intention for city staff or police to monitor the cameras routinely. According to the proposal, the cameras would be in five locations, covering Chamberlain Avenue from the Ames Intermodal Facility to Stanton Avenue, as well as Welch Avenue from Lincoln Way to the area south of the clock tower at the intersection of Welch and Chamberlain. If needed, a camera could be put in the 100 block of Welch Avenue, but the other cameras might already cover that area. Installing the cameras going to cost about $50,000 and then have an annual cost of about $2,800. Also Tuesday night, yes, it was a big night at the council. The council also approved a report on the Lincoln Way Corridor Implementation Plan submitted by city staff, which recommends focusing on that street between Duff and Clark Avenues and originating a streetscape plan for the length of the corridor. An amendment to the plan would make the area between Duff and Clark a priority for zoning changes that would create more opportunities for mixed uses on the avenue and encourage redevelopment. The plan also recommends that the city hire a landscaped architectural firm to help install streetscape features along Lincoln Way. And yet one more thing the council did. The council awarded a contract to install a new traffic signal at the intersection of the Interstate 35 northbound off-ramp and East 13th Street. Project expected to cost about $220,000, be paid for by the city in a grant from the Iowa Department of Transportation. Big night at the Ames City Council. Also Wednesday in the Tribune, QC Supply, a Nebraska-based livestock supply retailer, preparing to open a warehouse and regional office in East Ames next month. The company will sell everything from clothing, farm tools, and animal supplies to full-scale livestock housing for swine and poultry operations. QC Supply also does project management for building livestock operations. The company chose Ames because of its proximity to Interstate 35 and U.S. Highway 30, along with Iowa being the largest pork-producing state in the country. QC Supply going to house its regional warehouse and distribution center near the intersection of Lincoln Way and Dayton Avenue. Now, the company has 21 locations in the Midwest, Louisiana, Mississippi, North Carolina, South Carolina. Seven of its locations are here in Iowa. The company also plans to work with Iowa State University to find interns and to help produce research projects on swine, chicken, and turkey operations. Also Wednesday in the Tribune, for the first time in 5 years, the Ames community going to have the opportunity to stand in one of Iowa's lowest points today when Martin Marietta opens up its limestone mine. Friday's event started 5 a.m., and it's going to last until mid-afternoon, going to feature food and beverages, a tour, demonstrations, and information about the Iowa limestone industry, as well as the partners and contractors that make the operation possible. Now, originally, Martin Marietta opened up the limestone mine located at 831 East Riverside Road to the public in 2002. Thursday in the Tribune, the big story, the Iowa State University Presidential Search Committee has named four finalists to become the next leader of the state's largest university. The names of the finalists have not been released, but they will be released the day before they're scheduled to visit campus for interviews and open forums. The candidates are scheduled to visit campus next Thursday and Friday, October 5th and 6th, and the following Monday and Tuesday, October 9th and 10th. ISU students and faculty and community members will be able to give their input on the ISU search website, and which will then be provided to the regents to consider when they meet on October 23rd at Iowa State, where they are expected to interview the finalists themselves and then make a decision. ISU and the regents have been searching for a new president, as you know, after former President Stephen Leith left the school last May to become president at Auburn University. Interim President Benjamin Allen, who said he's not interested in staying on a permanent basis, has been serving in that role since Leith's departure. Now, there was some disagreement among committee members on how the campus visits by the finalists ought to be handled. ISU Professor Stephen Freeman argued the session should not be streamed live online because of the advantage that gives to the other candidates. He said it gives that last person an advantage. That's not a level playing field, he said. We'll see how that plays out. Also on Thursday in the Trib, an open house is going to take place next Tuesday, October 3rd, at the Council Chambers at City Hall to provide residents with information and answer questions about planned pavement improvements on 13th Street from Ridgewood to Harding Avenue. The open house from 5 to 6:30 in the Council Chambers at City Hall, 515 Clark. Project will include pavement improvements from the Union Pacific Railroad crossing to Harding Avenue, construction of a shared use path from Ridgewood to Northwestern, drainage improvements, and improvements to the water main along 13th Street. So that is going to be next Tuesday, October 3rd. In today's Tribune, the Friday Tribune, which you will see when you get it in your mailbox, word that the Campus Town Action Association is making its final effort to gather signatures in support of a special tax district before bringing the plan to the Ames City Council next month. All property owners in the district have been mailed a copy of the final petition, which asks the council to approve forming a self-supporting municipal improvement district to raise money for various projects. The city requires at least 25% of the property owners to sign that petition before it can consider it as an ordinance. Also in today's Trib, word that teachers and staff in the Ballard and Roland Story school districts have voted to recertify their unions in the first vote after changes in the state's collective bargaining law took effect last February. Members of the Ballard Educational Association voted 121-3 in favor of maintaining their union, while Ballard Story Educational Association members recertified by a vote of 72-1. The two Story County districts, part of 13 school districts and community colleges around Iowa, voting whether to continue operating with their unions over the past couple of weeks. Also on today's front page, something Gail alluded to minutes ago, not a story, but a teaser headline leading up to the sports page with word that Iowa State opened its Big 12 conference schedule last night with a loss to Texas at Jack Trice Stadium here in Ames. The unfortunate final score there, Texas 17, ISU 7. Okay. Now let's take a look at some of the stories making news around the community papers, the weeklies in the area. In the Nevada Journal this week, nice headline, "Don't be snowed by lack of notice. Move cars if flurries fly." It may still only be September, but snow was on the mind of members of the Nevada City Council this past week. While snow is likely weeks and we hope months away, the Nevada City Council voted Monday to approve wording that more accurately states there is no requirement for Nevada, no requirement to let residents know when a snow ordinance goes into effect. The message was simple. If snow's falling, get your car off the street and out of city-owned parking lots. It seems simple. In the past, city officials, such as the police chief and street superintendent, have tried to give residents fair warning about snow ordinances going into effect. They've used everything from Code Red, a system with many bells and whistles that called residents, but Code Red hasn't been used in recent years because city personnel didn't have enough staffing to keep up with it. The city has, in recent years, still tried to alert residents about the snow ordinance through its Facebook page, website, and other news sources. In other words, they've gone out of their way a lot. But basically, Public Safety Director Rick Martinez said many residents who get ticketed seem to have an excuse that they didn't see that the ordinance was in effect or didn't receive notice soon enough. But by ordinance, the city does not need to inform residents. Now the wording of that ordinance will make that very clear. So if you're in Nevada and it starts snowing, move your car. Okay? Also in the Nevada Journal, at the city council meeting on Monday, a woman really came after the city to do a better job of notifying residents about work near their property. Carrie Christensen said street work in front of her home was started before she and other residents received notice of that work. Now, what upset her and her husband, Brian, the most was that they had just poured a new driveway less than 2 weeks earlier. They found out that street workers then had cut into 2 feet of their new concrete. They were not happy. Christensen said again, that the street in front of her house probably did need work, but she wishes the city had let her know about the work ahead of time. City Administrator Matt Martison said it was a wrench in the plans, it was a mistake, and that the city did not provide the proper information ahead of time. Also, the council got a look in Nevada at some new turnout gear that will be ordered for the Nevada Fire Department. A dozen sets of turnout gear were ordered. 10 more will soon be ordered. The new gear is going to replace gear that is now 16 years old. One more story out of Nevada. The Nevada School Board elected a new president and vice president and swore in new board member Joe Anderson. During its meeting on Monday, Tori Carsred was elected president, Tom Meyer as vice president. The board also voted to keep its current schedule of meeting at 6:30 on the second and fourth Mondays of the month. The board also toured the new Nevada Middle School Makerspace, space designed to be an interactive classroom where fifth through eighth grade students learn valuable skills such as collaboration, critical thinking, and problem solving. From the Ames News Republican this week, word that the Boone County Board of Supervisors heard concerns from a community of 17 families who live along QF Lane in Madrid. One resident said the concerns revolve around the condition of QF Lane and their desire to ensure that Grant's Woods are used as a nature trail to benefit residents. One more very quick story. The Roland Story School District students raised more than $1,000. This is the Story City Herald, to donate to the American Red Cross to help victims of Hurricane Harvey. Congratulations to those students.
So Dennis is, as he was talking about, snow flurrying around, and he's heading out to avoid that. So Dennis is going to warmer climes, to California, sunny California. And so you're going to take a 1 week break, but then you're going to be doing this from there.
I will be with you on Friday mornings doing these same news headlines. So
we appreciate that because you do a very good synopsis of it all for us. Thank you very much.
You bet.
As you no doubt know, an election will be held next month that will result in a new mayor for Ames. At the age of 76, after 12 consecutive years as mayor, Mayor Ann Campbell will retire at the end of this year. Mayor Campbell has actually been in city government for more than 12 years. Prior to her current position, she spent 16 years on the Ames City Council. In the weeks to come, Local Talk plans to bring you the debate between candidates for the position as it opens up. But before we do that, we wish to take the opportunity to reflect on the ideas and style of the outgoing mayor. We bring you a recording of Mayor Campbell reflecting on her life in public service and on being a female politician. She spoke to a crowd at the Ames Public Library in a presentation sponsored by the AAUW, Ames, the Ames Public Library, the Carrie Chapman Catt Center for Women and Politics at ISU, and the League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County. Campbell's presentation was called Experiences of Being Ames Mayor and a Woman in Politics.
I wanted to have a career teaching. I didn't want to have a goal of running for office. But in looking at it, I am reminded, not by what I think of myself, but occasionally when people do bring the subject of being a woman in government up to me. I remember when I was running for mayor and I was at a friend's house and he said to me, well, once there was a woman mayor, I guess it worked out all right. I was a little taken aback. Night before last, I was at an event where a young woman whom I had met before who works for Representative King came up to me and said, I know you and I probably don't agree on much, but I do want to tell you that as I travel around the state or around the district, you're the only woman mayor that I meet. And so things like that point out to me. However, when I look at does this make a difference, I like to think that it doesn't. When I look at my time in city government, I look one time during one term when I was serving on city council, 5 out of 6 of us were women. Then fast forward to when I was first elected as mayor, there were 6 men. Currently, I'm pleased to say that we have an equal balance on the city council of men and women. But all of that being said, I honestly can't think that there is anything about any of that gender makeup in any of those times, except for the lineup in the women's bathroom at break, that has made one of those periods better or worse than another. Maybe people from observing it from outside can, but frankly, I can't. So I'm here to say that I hope that nobody has ever voted for or against me, or for that matter, any other person, because of gender. So if you came tonight to hear what's listed as the topic, that's it. You can go home now, and it won't hurt my feelings at all. But I did think one of the things of announcing that you're going to become past tense soon is kind of gives the opportunity to do some reflecting about changes during that time and about different roles. And one of the things that I've had a chance to reflect on is having had the opportunity to serve on the city council and then the opportunity to serve as mayor. And, of course, it was serving as mayor that got me this invitation here tonight. But I think that the roles are quite different from that of being on city council. Granted, city council is good preparatory, perhaps, but I think not the be-all and end-all, because I look at the roles as being quite different. And so I would like to touch a little bit then on what, again, going back and talking a little bit about myself, I guess, but the experiences that I had prior to being mayor that I think were good preparation and the kinds of things that they required. And basically, in thinking about that, I think there were 3 different committees that for one reason or another I had been asked to chair. Every single one of them brought together not like-minded people, but people who didn't have a lot in common but needed to come with a lot in common. The first one, and I see Bob Bourne back there, was chairing the Transit Advisory Committee, which ultimately produced what we know today as SciRide. But the background of that, in the late 70s, the government of the student body had passed a referendum saying that they wanted to put a significant part of the activity fee into a bus system. The city already had a modest bus system known as SciRide that was, as I recall, a 9-to-5, Monday to Friday, is that right, Bob? Dial-a-ride system. And so the question was, could these be merged? So a committee that was made up of the government of the student body, a city council member, university administration, neighbors who wanted bus service, and I'm probably forgetting somebody else, but basically people who came from quite different backgrounds with quite different interests, spent many months looking, number one, for a prototype around the country. There was none. And so then looking at whether or not something could be put together that would combine all of these various interests, both in management as well as in funding. So I had the opportunity to chair that committee that went on and on and on. And I remember after we thought we had a pretty good proposal in mind and met with university administration and with a city council and gave what we thought was just a hotshot presentation. And as I walked out, the mayor said to me, well, that was really a good plan and a good presentation. And I said, yes, but we'll never see a bus system. There were so many questions and concerns. Well, needless to say, thanks to the fact that we immediately got a good director and we now have a system that is the envy of the country and is bursting at the seams and gives approximately 7 million rides a year. But point being, I think it was that kind of background of needing to bring totally different people together to see if there could be a solution. Another committee that may not be judged as a success was 1988 was the first infamous Vichy riot. And the combination of the president of the university and the mayor asked if I would chair a committee that brought together the most mixed bag of people you ever want to meet to see if there could be solutions to that. We came up with what we thought were a lot of very good solutions, such as an ordinance that would say that you could only tap so many kegs at a time, and that was going to, we knew, slow down the flow of beer. Little did we think about the fact that bottles to be hurled the next year were more dangerous, perhaps, than opening the spigot. And then the other one, I think also, that may not be in people's memories as much, but was a committee dealing with whether away the management or the ownership, if you will, of Mary Greeley Medical Center. That probably is far back in people's minds. But remember, Captain Greeley gave Mary Greeley Medical Center in the name of his wife to the city of Ames. It was a municipal hospital. And municipal hospitals tend to be municipally supported, in other words, with tax dollars and so on and so forth. Mary Greeley had become successful enough that it had not, I believe it was 1958 when the last property tax dollars went into the hospital, but there were still these tentacles with city government, such as buying and selling property and so on and so forth. So it became an issue that obviously was a concern to the medical profession, was a concern to the neighbors, was a concern to the city. So again, that was a committee that I was able to chair. Okay, the only reason I tick through all of these, however, is to say I think these are the kinds of things that are perhaps more important than whether you believe in tax increment financing or not, in terms of running for mayor and being mayor. And there's different kinds of mayors. In Ames, we have what is called the weak mayor form of government. In other words, and believe me, that is literal. But a strong mayor form of government, which we have in Council Bluffs and in Waterloo, means that a mayor is elected, it's a full-time job, and there is no city manager. I cannot imagine such an operation. But in Ames and in most communities, the role of mayor varies from one to another, but basically it is a weak mayor form of government. And I think that this is important in terms of running a meeting to ensure that it is impartial, both impartial in recognizing people in the audience, but also recognizing council members. And the mayor does not have the right to vote. Many a time in the last 12 years, I would have liked to have voted and might not have voted with the majority, but that is not the role. Actually, my colleague Chris Nelson was reminding me about the role of a weak mayor. He had been to talk to, I think maybe one of his kids' elementary school classes about city government and city council and mayors and who does what and so on and so forth. And so then I guess the teacher at the end said to the kids, "So what'd you learn?" And one kid raised his hand and said that the mayor doesn't do anything. So Chris could hardly wait to get back and share that one with me. But one of the things the mayor does do, and I think is one of probably the most strenuous but important things that it does, is we have 20 city boards and commissions, all different shapes, size, flavors. Some are independent, some are judicial, some are advisory, and so on. That means there are, and I had a count done today, 123 people to appoint to each of these boards and commissions. And I look upon that as one of the things I will not miss come January. because I take that responsibility very seriously, but also look upon it as one of the most taxing things, if you will. And as a matter of fact, as I look over people in this audience, I can recognize some who were dismayed when I went to a Senate committee in Des Moines and spoke against legislation that was mandating gender balance on boards and commissions. And it did pass, however, with no tentacles to it. But the reason that I was concerned and dismayed about this is that appointing boards and commissions, as I say, it's probably one of the hardest things I do and one of the things that I am most sensitive about, balance. But I look upon balance as being gender, as being ethnicity, as being neighborhood, as being age, and as being philosophical difference. I think it's very important to have all of those things balance together. And if you take one of them and say, I've got to have this be a woman's job and this be a man's job, I think it's possible to lose, and nobody's put me in jail yet for not doing that rigidly, but I am pleased to say that I think all of our boards and commissions are indeed quite balanced. The other thing that I think is important in the role of mayor as well as city council members is that these are nonpartisan jobs, and I think that perhaps now more than ever that that is extremely important. And as I meet with other mayors, which I do fairly routinely around the state, we have the Iowa League of Cities and the so-called Metropolitan Coalition, which is a meeting of the mayors of the 10 largest cities. I honestly cannot tell you the political affiliation of many of those individuals. But what I can say is, as I go to those meetings, there is universal joint concern about not partisan issues, but home rule issues, recognizing things that ought to be maintained on the local level rather than decisions that are made on the state level. And I'll touch on that again in a minute. And then I think also the role of mayor is, frankly, like it or not, it's an image one. Some of you may have noted that yesterday I had a rapidly produced letter to the editor resulting from defacing of a school board member's yard signs. And I'd had a call in the morning from the city manager and the chief of police saying, we've got to respond to that, and we've got to respond to that immediately, and this is your job, do it. And so I think those kinds of things that do require immediate response are mayoral jobs. The same could be said when a number of years ago, the big flood in Ames. It was certainly not the mayor's job to determine where the sandbags were going to go or what's going to happen when the water goes off, but it was a mayor's job to have the press conferences and listen to the phone calls coming in and whatnot. Or then there's also the job that mayors do. One of the things that I will miss, actually, is an invitation to the Edwards Third Grade every year. And they have a wonderful section on city planning and go through basically zoning 101 and then build a city made out of shoeboxes and paper towel rolls and you name it, and lay it out on the floor and then invite the mayor to come and have the explanation as to why we have everything there. I'm always amused that police station always had a donut shop right next door. So they've got that all figured out. Okay, so I think those are the jobs of mayor that I look on as I bring this term to an end. People have been asking me repeatedly, even people in my own family, oh, it must feel good to be winding down. Well, I'm afraid that there's been anything but a winding down kind of time with the kinds of things that we've seen going on. So before I wind down, I'd like to touch just briefly on some of the impacts that we see on the local level that are impacted by what's going on nationally, perhaps now more than ever before, on the state level, and then some of the things on the local level. When Mary was asking me about books that I have read, and one that she doesn't have in the library, it was written by a college classmate of mine, or not classmate, but a colleague. It was entitled, If Mayors Ruled the World. And actually, it's a highly academic kind of thing, but it really is pretty interesting. And the basic theme in looking at kind of the demise of nation state in some areas and saying that basically, as it was implied, that it's at the grassroots level that what happens right close to home is probably what the biggest impact is. So let me just talk a little bit about some of those things on the various levels of government that I think percolate down that end up on the city's lap, whether we want them or not, particularly now, yesterday's decision on DACA, and previously the subject of the Paris Accords. And I might, in mentioning both of those things that certainly alarm a number of people here, there's always the question is, Mayor, aren't you going to sign on with all of the other mayors to make a statement? And that, I think, is a kind of a fine line. I mean, just this morning I had three requests from the National Association of Mayors on various things to sign on and make a joint statement. I'm pretty cautious about those kinds of things because I think it's important, number one, many of them I think should have council discussion before doing it, but we could spend our whole time on that and some that are perhaps more relevant than others. But nonetheless, the decisions made on the national level, I think, are particularly important to us. One of the things, needless to say, the subject of health care right now, and the subject of community development block grants, which we've been getting here since revenue sharing went away and community development block grants came in. But that's always something fragile on the national level. And, for example, what this means in Ames, Iowa, is doing a lot of our affordable housing programs for low and moderate income people. And also, it's those funds that have been used now to buy, there have been 10 houses that have been bought out of bankruptcy and sold to Habitat for Humanity with those funds. And just last week, there was a dedication of one that a South Sudanese family is just thrilled to move into. So those are the kinds of things that I think we monitor, and what happens on the national level indeed does percolate down. State level, I probably have never spent as much time hanging around the Capitol as I have in the last year and a half, and going to be doing the same thing next week. But I think increasingly the concern that we have, and again, I say it as a bipartisan concern with all of the mayors that I deal with, is the chipping away at home rule that, to our way of thinking, is much more appropriate to things that are different in Story City from what they are in Ames. Or so we, for example, have seen the huge overhaul of property tax by the state legislature. It's the local. It's not the legislature, but it is local government and, you know, yours and my streets that are a product of how the property tax is doled out. Right now, for example, as we change to have a reduction of property tax for commercial and industrial, which means that there's going to be more on residential, but there's been the promise of a so-called backfill, state funds coming in to mitigate the lack of property tax. We've all read about what's going on in the budget, in the state budget. If that backfill goes away, so does $1 million of backfill funding for Ames. So it does indeed impact us big time. One of the meetings that I attended at the Capitol long toward the end of the session with the Metropolitan Coalition was wringing hands over saying, can you imagine how much time we have spent in this last session on fireworks? Well, fireworks are a state decision, but nonetheless, the calls go into the Ames Police Station. They don't go into the Capitol. Gun control, And then one that is near and dear to my heart because of where I live south of campus is the whole residential occupancy overturned of the three unrelated people requirement that we've had in Ames that has done not a 100% job, but nonetheless a more successful than nothing job of trying to maintain balanced housing. And that is something that we'll have on our agenda next Tuesday. There's no good solution, but hopefully there'll be some solutions. So those are the things I think as we look at from each of the levels. Then let me look just a little bit before I close at something specific to Ames as we kind of reflect on the whole time and things that I wouldn't have talked about at all 12 years ago and coming into this job. One is the subject of mental health. And in mental health, which has gotten huge abuse in my book on the state level, several years ago, for example, the Ames Police Department started having a 3/4 time employee who is just dealing with mental health. Well, it's kind of sad that the police is the first door into mental health concerns, but nonetheless, that's something that we need to be concerned about. We look at the growth, though apparently it's leveled off this time, but in ISU enrollment, the response that this has to make for housing, and for SciRide that is bursting at the seams. And so looking at that balance is something. The whole subject of sustainability, and we meet in looking at watershed issues as we meet with the watershed up to the north. So these are kinds of things that I see that have been on the horizon recently. Now, before I end, there are just a couple of things. These kinds of things everybody could probably put on. But I think one of the things that Ames has been well known for is being progressive, thinking outside the box, doing some pretty daring kinds of things. We mentioned SciRide. Another such thing was in 1975 when the resource recovery plant opened and we quit having a landfill and converted garbage to electricity, and we bring in garbage now from 13 different communities around for the resource recovery plant. So we've had a history of things like that. I think the history can continue if we look at some things that are in the formative stages that may or may not happen. I hope they will happen now, but I'd like to touch on a couple of them. One is a look at a so-called solar farm. As we look at the fact that many of us don't have the kind of roof line that can put solar panels on the south side of our house, but people are interested in having alternative energy, and so there are meetings going on right now to look at whether or not you and I can sign up to participate, that's my understanding that Iowa State has already signed up to participate in a solar farm, which basically means I don't have the panels on my house, but I have them on said farm. So that, I think, is something that I hope all of us would be watching. And the other thing before I close down is that's been going on again for a couple of years, a discussion of what is being referred to as a healthy life center. But again, I think it is like some of those things that we've had before where different entities, public and private, have been looking at joining forces for, again, something that is not, we can't find a prototype any place in the country, but it has brought together discussions with Iowa State University, with Mary Greeley Medical Center, with the City of Ames for a swimming pool and gyms, and with Heartland Senior Center, as well as DMAC and the county, whether or not there can be a so-called healthy living center that would serve all ages and all income levels. Again, that would require fundraising, bond issues, and a lot of moving parts coming together. But those are the kinds of things that I think Ames has been particularly good at, and I'm going to be excited to watch them from my rocking chair. So thank you for inviting me, and thank you for taking a night out, a nice night for coming.
Thanks to Ursula Rudenberg for bringing us those highlights from a farewell address by Ames Mayor Ann Campbell, who is retiring after many years of service to the community. That event was held this month at the library in Ames. Now I'd like to welcome Healthiest Ames. Cheryl Langston is here with us, who is with the group Healthiest Ames. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Thanks for coming in on this lovely morning. So first of all, tell us, what is Healthiest Ames?
Healthiest Ames was formed after the Wellmark initiative to recognize Blue Zone communities in Iowa. When Ames was not chosen, the group that was involved stiffened their back and said, we think we can do this on our own without the Blue Zone's connotation, and we've had great support from Wellmark. There are 16 people on our board, a good cross-section of the community, and all very talented. We settled on four areas of focus. Those are healthy food choices, health condition awareness, physical activity, and community connectedness. And our vision statement is Ames will be the healthiest community in Iowa. So that's okay. What we're working toward.
So that's your goal. That's your commitment to try to bring that to reality.
Absolutely. Focusing on those four areas.
That sounds pretty all-inclusive, not just physical health, but all aspects of it.
Exactly.
And kind of just well-being in general.
Yes, exactly.
And how long has Healthiest Ames been in existence?
We've been in existence about 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
We started by doing extensive research in the community about what things we do have, what things we don't have, what things might be in progress. We provided support for initiatives such as the e-cigarette ordinance. We've worked with the city to encourage development of a complete streets policy. Our community, we work toward earning a bronze level bicycle-friendly community by the League of American Bicyclists. We've sponsored summer gardening programs for kids. And one of the things we're really excited about is providing bicycle helmets for every third grader in Ames.
You do that?
Yes, we do.
So you really are involved in a lot of different things, at taking many different approaches, the policy level, working with the city, and then working with the schools to do that.
That's right.
And you have a big event coming up on Sunday, so tell us about that.
Yes, we do. And if you have an in on the weather, that would be great. Yes, our fifth Open Streets event will be on Sunday afternoon. That's October 1st. We'll be from 1 until 4 on a few blocks of Main Street. We'll have about 20 or 22 entities that are participating to provide all kinds of entertainment and something for all ages. We have a rock climbing wall. You can pull the fire hose with the fire department. You can play pickleball. You can shoot baskets. You can shake hands with Cy. You can paint a rock. You can do some sidewalk chalk. You can jump rope. You can. There's going to be a bicycle rodeo, so bring your bike. Skunk River Cycles will be providing free bike tune-up. There will be all kinds of activities for all ages, and we encourage Grandma and Grandpa to come and bring your neighbors and spend the afternoon on Main Street doing fun things.
And all that will be set up on Main Street, a rock climbing wall and basketball nets. And
yes, it's from Douglas down to Clark.
So right outside the studio, not far from
here. That's right.
And I was looking at the website, and it also said something about certificates being awarded for walking. What's
yes,
that?
Thank you. Mary Greeley sponsors Mileage Club for the elementary students in Story County, and there are almost 400 children who have qualified to earn this Mileage Club certificate, which means they completed 30 miles.
Of walking.
Of walking. So we're going to provide them the opportunity to be introduced, and they'll receive a certificate in recognition of their accomplishment.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that is impressive. And what do you hope people take away, or what do you hope they get out of this event if they come?
Well, we hope that obviously one of our focuses is community connectedness and of course, the physical activity. So we hope that they'll just come and spend a few hours on Main Street enjoying all of the options that are available. There will be people there that will be doing some Zumba and some yoga and some martial arts. And there's going to be a dance club from Iowa State that's coming. Then I think they do some hip-hop type movement. So there's all kinds of opportunities to participate. You can come and learn a new dance.
Mm-hmm. So you can come watch, or you can. There'll actually be classes on some of
sure.
these things, and people
yeah.
can join in and try them out. So what do you think you're going to participate in? Is there one thing you're looking forward to?
Well, it's not the rock climbing wall. I'm just looking forward to seeing lots of kids come and to receive their mileage certificates and participate and making sure everything runs as smoothly as possible.
So you'll be busy with the coordinating
right.
and everything. So you've been planning this for a while, and this is the fifth time you've had this Open Streets.
Yes.
What does that name mean?
Well, it means sort of it's a reflection of what we're doing. You close a street and provide all kinds of activities for people in the community to come together and participate in. And I believe it started maybe in Columbia. It's not an Iowa thing. It's mm-hmm. not a United States thing. It's become sort of an international trend. And so we're just pleased to be able to provide the opportunity for people to come and enjoy things at no cost.
Yeah. And so it's kind of a cool idea. You basically close the streets to open the streets to people.
That's right.
Yeah. I
get it. Absolutely. Yes. And we're obviously encouraging all kinds of activity that involves all different kinds of transportation, you know, ride your bike, walk.
Jog.
Sure.
Skateboard.
We have great parks in Ames, and it's as you drive through Ames, you see people walking and you see people on bikes. It's great to see families walking together and biking together and see all the activity that's happening in our public parks. So we encourage people to get outside, get off the rocker in the front porch, and come and join us on Sunday.
Okay, and fall's a good time to do it, and hopefully the weather will be good.
Yes.
But you're going to have it rain or shine?
Well, if it rains, probably no.
Okay.
We don't have an option for indoor.
Indoors, right. So, but hopefully it won't rain solid and you'll be able to get it in.
Absolutely.
Okay. So just one more time, give us the details so people can put it on their calendar.
Yeah, this will be Sunday, October 1st. On Main Street from 1 until 4. And there's additional information on our website, which is healthiestames.org.
Okay, and we'll put a link to that on our website. So thank you very much for coming in this morning to tell us about it.
Thank you for the opportunity.
We've been speaking with Cheryl Langston from Healthiest Ames. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Thanks to Dennis Hart, who provided the weekly news roundup, and to Ursula Rudenberg, who brought us the segment on Mayor Ann Campbell's tenure as mayor. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Evan Taylor. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. KHOI is a community radio station that is driven by volunteers and made possible by donations from people, businesses, and organizations in the community. So please support KHOI. It's easy to donate or become a member. Just go to our website, khoifm.org, and look for the donate button. Local Talk is also a radio production workshop, which means you can be part of the team of volunteer producers and reporters. If you would like to join our team, contact us at 515-292-2878 or through the website. Also, remember you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you enjoyed this show, please tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is made possible in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. In the heart of Ames, the Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun. Located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza, the Farmers Market provides fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment every Saturday.